we're beginning the third series of shiurim related to the issue of malach on Chol HaMoed. So the first year we spoke a little bit more in the background sense as to where Chol HaMoed comes from, the issue of malach at the Reis, at the Rabbonim. Last week we focused primarily on the hetzer of davar aved, a loss of profit, loss of money, what is considered to be a davar, what's not considered to be a davar aved, and now tonight's year. So we're going to begin with a discussion of the overall concepts of Chol HaMoed, particularly the issue of malach letzarech HaMoed. What type of kulas do we have in terms of doing malach and Chol HaMoed, but it's not a question of loss of money, but the malach that I want to do is definitely going to enhance the celebration of Chol HaMoed, the celebration of Yom Tov. So the sugi begins, so the first of the Ma'amar comes with the Mishnah in Maseches Ma'ikoton, Hahedya Tofe Kedarko Ve'a'uman Makhlev. So the Mishnah, rather than telling you what the rule is, the Mishnah is giving you an illustration of the rule. We have to try to figure out the rules on our own. So the Mishnah is describing a person who is sewing on Chol HaMoed. Obviously, he's clothing, rips something, he's sewing, he's fixing something on Chol HaMoed. So the Mishnah says that if he's a hedyo, if he's a regular guy, not a professional, he's not a tailor, he just probably wants to stitch up something in a very amateur type of way, so then toifa kedarko, then he's permitted to do so. Whereas if he's an umman, if he's a professional, then he would not be able to do a professional stitching. He would have to do makhlev. He'd have to do it in some kind of an abnormal stitching. What kind of word is makhlev? Makhlev comes from the word kelev, means the teeth of a dog. So just as the teeth of a dog are not exactly straight, so too the stitching is not going to be so straight. You have to do the stitching of the shunna dikaway in a strange way. So it's this, well, half a line in the Mishnah that sets into motion all the basic kolam in terms of what kind of tzarchi and moed and mutter, what's not mutter. So what exactly is the principle behind this illustration? Two dinim, that hedyot is tzarchi kedarko and the uman has to do with kelei hayad and the shinoi. What are Chazal really telling us? But the Rishonim explain, the Chazal are telling us is as follows. Clearly this is the tzarchi moed. Clearly the person needs the clothing. If he doesn't need the clothing, why would we permit him to do anything? There's an issue of malach and Chol HaMoed. The Reis said, the Rabban is not a davar aved, nothing's going to happen if you don't fix it. So clearly this is not the rule of last week, but rather this is another kula, another rule that Chazal presenting does, that whatever is the tzarech HaMoed is permissible, but not always. It's permissible if it's what we call a ma'ase hedyot, in contrast to a ma'ase umman. If it's an amateur kind of a job any person could do, then it's permissible to be done with tzarech HaMoed and Chol HaMoed. If it's a professional job, then it cannot be done. It can only be done by a professional if the professional does it, in a sense, an amateurish way. Since in Umar, the professional, I imagine, you give a suit into the tailor to fix, and it comes with dog stitches, it comes with stitches that look like a mess, so you would never consider that to be a professional job. So the Umar has to go out of his way to do it in an abnormal fashion in order to meet the criteria, in effect, what's called the Ma'aseh Hedyot. So there are two rules that are now emanating from this Mishnah. If everything is the Tzarech HaMoed, if it's not the Tzarech HaMoed, then everything is also. If it's the Tzarech HaMoed, rule number one is Ma'aseh Hedyot is Mutter. Rule number two is the Ma'aseh Umar is going to be also. We can extrapolate from this Mishnah to many, many other cases, as long as we keep those two rules intact, as long as we work with Ma'aseh Hedyot and Ma'aseh Umar. One of the famous extrapolations is a Psaka Deramo. We know one of the most popular Isurim, so to speak, about Chol HaMoed is the use of riding on Chol HaMoed. It's a Mishnah, you're not allowed to ride on Chol HaMoed, but the Mishnah gives you certain examples when you are allowed to ride, and most of the examples in the Mishnah are situations of Dover of it. So there are more rights that this issue of riding on Chol HaMoed is not fundamentally different than any other issue of Chol HaMoed. If it's the Tzorech HaMoed, if it's a Ma'aseh Hedyot, then it's Mutter. If it's the Tzorech HaMoed and it's a Ma'aseh Uman, then it's Aser. If it's not the Tzorech HaMoed, then for sure it's Aser. So says the Ramam, all the Mishnayos and all the Sugyas that talk about the prohibition of riding on Chol HaMoed, we're talking about professional riding. We're talking about calligraphy, talking about a Sofer, we're talking about things that take a lot of work, a lot of practice. That's a Ma'aseh Uman. Not everybody can write that way, and therefore it's going to be also, even if it's the Tzorech HaMoed. But if it's just a scribbling, he's writing a shopping list or something, he's writing a couple of words, and it's going to enhance his Chol HaMoed, it's going to enhance his Yom Tov, so then as long as it's a Ma'aseh Hedyot, technically speaking, it would be permissible. And technically, there's no real need to write Kelei Chayav. There's no real need to write with a Shinui. There's a minute that we try to write with a Shinui whenever possible, but technically speaking, the Rabbah writes it's not really necessary, because it's just a parable to this halacha. If it's a Hedyot, so if it's a Kedarko, so a Hedyot, Kais is Kedarko. A Hedyot can do anything Kedarko, as long as it's the Tzorech HaMoed, it's a Ma'aseh Hedyot, it's going to be permissible. So comes the Gemara in the second of the Ma'amar Kamos, and now quotes a whole series of different halachas, which are also the Tzorech HaMoed, but here all of a sudden Chazal seems to permit even things which are not necessarily Ma'aseh Hedyot. So the Braisa begins in Ma'akot Nafid Beis and Vadeis, Tanar Abanan, Tochnim B'moed B'Tzorech HaMoed. One is permitted to grind up flour on Chol HaMoed. provided that he needs it for the moed. Anything shalot tzarach moed is for sure also. What if he planned on grinding X amount of flour? He thought he was going to bake a few matzahs on Pesach or pick up machalos on Sukkot, and he ends up with more flour than he really needed, so he doesn't have to feel so bad. So he didn't do an aveira. He tried. You don't have to count out to the last the grain. He's aiming approximately how much flour he's going to need. One is permitted to cut wood, to chop wood, for any yantif need of any chalamoid, need on chalamoid, also. But if it's for after yantif, then you're not allowed to do it. If a person ended up with a little bit extra wood, he doesn't have to feel bad either, because he did it thinking that that's the amount that he needs. Matilin sheikha b'moid l'tzarech hamoid, one is permitted to make beer on chalamoid. If beer in the days of Chazal wasn't chametz, our beer was barley beer, but in the days of Chazal they didn't have barley beer. In the days of Chazal they used to make fruit beer. It's more described as making date beer. So if a person is making beer or other kinds of drinks on chalamoid, if it's a tzarech hamoid, it's okay. If it's lo tzarech hamoid, also, but if it's for after yantif, then it's a problem. From hita ba'elser harei zemuta. If you make, you thought you're going to drink X amount, and you ended up with more, that's okay. But in all these cases, you can't play a trick. You can't say, well, I think I'm going to need 100 cases of beer over the next 3 days, so that's not really what you want. It. You really want it for Yisholm Zoch Rifti Yantif, so that you're not allowed to do. So you have to be honest, you're not going to be Maharim. So these are the three examples that Chazal speak about grinding the grain, cutting down the wood, making the beer, and the Braisa says these are all Mutal Tzarech HaMoed. So the Rishonim point out that some of these activities, particularly the making of the beer, making of beer was not something that everybody did. The Gemara described there were certain people, that was their profession. They were professional beer makers. So if that's the case, so wait a second, why are these things mutter? These are ma'isa uman. These are not ma'isa hedyot. We just got finished saying, hedyot tefik kedarka v'uman matlif, that whenever you have something which is l'tzarech hamoed, it's not a free, it's not a green light, do whatever you want. L'tzarech hamoed is only mutter if it's a ma'isa hedyot, or if it's a ma'isa uman don til yachayad, which is equated to a ma'isa hedyot. So how can Chazal permit the making of beer or other kinds of tzarech hayom, even presumably a ma'isa uman? What happened to the Mishnah and Daf Ches? So the Ramban develops the following yourself. The Ramban explains that all the Rishonim follow along, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that there's a fundamental difference between Tzorchei Hayom and Tzorchei Ochel Nefesh Hayom. Tzorchei Hayom means, I'm not going to eat clothing, I just want to have a nice suit that's not ripped on Yom Tov. So that's a legitimate Tzorchei Hayom, but that's not an Ochel Nefesh. When it comes to the realm of Ochel Nefesh, so here I want to beer to drink, I want to make matzahs, I want to use the wood for whatever I need for cooking. Those are considered to be Tzorchei Ochel Nefesh. Tzorchei Ochel Nefesh, that's a different category of Gavrei. Tzorchei Ochel Nefesh, everything's mutter. Even a Maisa Uman is going to be mutter for Tzorchei Ochel Nefesh. Then the Ramban, the Shulchan Aruch, quote even further, what if you have something that's Ochel Nefesh, but it's not real Ochel Nefesh? In the following sense, we know that when it comes to Yom Tif, so there's a heter called Ochel Nefesh and Yom Tif. But even the heter of Ochel Nefesh and Yom Tif has certain limitations to it. There are certain halachas that are not permissible based on Ochel Nefesh and Yom Tif. We spoke a lot about this in the morning shiurim. Let's say a person wants to go Yom Tif morning to pluck an apple off the tree. So you're not going to do that. But it's Ochel Nefesh. I want to eat the apple. What's the difference between cooking the food, baking the bread, and plucking off the apple? So there's no question about it that Kaitzer is also Yom Tov. Today's the Daf Yomi. Kaitzer, Shemiyala, Peres HaNoshen. There's an absolute issue to pluck fruit off a tree on Yom Tov. It's a Shaila, the Rishonim, it's a Deraisa, the Rabbanan, but there's no question that it's also. So come to Rishonim and say, even though on Yom Tov, not all malachas are mutlum tzarech ochel nefesh, but on Chalamoid, everything goes. Chalamoid, you can pluck your fruit if you want it. You can do things that go way above and beyond the limitations of Yom Tov. Not only do we permit Ochel Nefesh proper on Chol HaMoed, but we even permit what's called Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. Machshirei Ochel Nefesh means different types of activities that are necessary to enable you to eat the food, but it's not preparing the food proper. Let's say, for example, the Gemara describes the person wants to shecht an animal on Yom Tov. That's okay. You're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov. That's Ochel Nefesh. And you realize that your knife isn't sharp. So you want to go ahead and sharpen up your knife, get your knife ready to shecht. So normally to sharpen a knife, that's a sharp malocha derais, that's not patish, the knife is not functioning properly. I'm fixing the broken knife, that's a nisa derais on Shabbos, that would be asim Torah. Am I permitted to sharpen the knife on Yom Tov? So there's a machlekes atanoim. So the Chacham's opinion was that that's not called Ochel Nefesh, that's called machshirei Ochel Nefesh. That's too far in advance of the actual eating of the food, and therefore it's also in a Torah to be done on Yom Tov. Okay, not Chol HaMoed on Yom Tov. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. If the knife was broken from before Yom Tov, and you could have fixed it from before Yom Tov, and you didn't, then you're not allowed to fix it on Yom Tov, even in HaTorah. If the knife broke on Yom Tov, then you would be permitted to fix it on Yom Tov Midaraisa. We happen to pass like Rabbi Yehuda, that Machshirin She'i'ev Shalasa Yisrib El Yom, that couldn't have been done from before Yom Tov, are permitted Min HaTorah to be done on Yom Tov, even though that's how we pass. And the Gemara says, Halacha Ve'en Merin Kein. We shouldn't publicize, we shouldn't tell so many people that. Because if you tell people that, next thing you know is they're going to do all kind of Machshirin on Yom Tov. So although Min HaTorah, really neat Mikra, didn't we pass it, then it's okay. Why don't you shy away from publicizing? The Gemara tells an interesting story. One of the Amoraim was sharpening his Shechita knife on Yom Tov. So his Talmud asked him, he said, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? So he said, oh, I'm not really sharpening, I'm just cleaning it off a little bit. I'm not really sharpening it. The Gemara says, wasn't true. He was sharpening it. So why didn't he tell the Talmud? Why did he say something that wasn't true? The Gemara says, because if he would have told him the truth, that would have been a violation of the din of Halacha Ve'en Merin Kein. You're not allowed to tell people this. So no one should tell. It's a big secret. You're not allowed to tell anybody that Machshirin are Mutter and Yom Tov. But L'maisa Mikra didn't really have Mutter. So come to Ramban and says, when it comes to Machshirin Echol Nefesh on Chol HaMoed, everything's Mutter. We go one step further on Chol HaMoed than we do on Yom Tov. You can do any Machshirin whatsoever. Machshirin She'ev Shemi V'yad Yom, Yev Shemi V'yad Yom. What would be the din, let's say, if a person's oven breaks on Chol HaMoed? So you want to call Sias to come fix the oven. So that would be okay. Ayat to Maisa Uman. Maisa Uman L'Tzarech HaYom is also. No, that's not called the Maisa Uman L'Tzarech HaYom. That's called the Maisa Uman L'Tzarech Echol Nefesh. I am not going to eat the oven. Doesn't matter. It's a Machshirin Echol Nefesh, and therefore it would be permissible. So we have really two very, very different categories of Tzarech HaYom. We have regular, standard, simple Tzarech HaYom, like fixing one's clothing, writing something. Those Tzarech HaYom are only Mutter if it's a Maisa HaYom, not a Maisa Uman. Then we have the high level of Tzarech HaYom called Tzarech Echol Nefesh, which are patterned after Yom Tov, that go even further than Yom Tov, and permit one across the board to anything and everything that's necessary for food is permissible on Chol HaMoed.
If on Yom Tov you can do
Machshirin Echol Nefesh that could not have been done before Yom Tov, why on Yom Tov can you not call the electrician to come fix your oven?
If the oven broke on Yom Tov,
so me'ika mikra din, it should be mutter. Right? Mikra din should be mutter. It's Machshirin. Yeah, we're not. It's halacha v'yom merin kein. Right. He wouldn't tell people to do it. Right. That's why I can't tell you to do it. Okay. A couple of years ago, I had a problem with that oven on Shavuos. Not a problem on Yom Tov. So I didn't call the electrician. I didn't call CS to come because I had to call PSCNG. And I didn't call myself. I had to get a grant to call PSCNG because there was a gas smell. So PSCNG comes, and the oven was on the Shabbos mode. What that means exactly, what you're allowed to do is another time, another place. The Lamaise was on a Shabbos mode. So I had this guy, this real PSNG fellow who was looking at my oven, and he couldn't figure out for the life of him how to turn off the Shabbos mode. He says, I've been working for PSNG for 30 years. He says, I never see anything as ridiculous as this. What is this sab on it? He couldn't figure out what in the world it was. I tried to show him the books, explained to him what to do. He couldn't figure it out. So he said, I've never seen this in my whole life. I said, you know, I don't want to surprise you or anything, but if you go down this block, I guarantee you, you'll see it in every single house. You'll see the same thing. So you might as well learn how to do it now. Anyway, Hashem, all's well that ends well. But I always said that it was the Sabbath mode that got to come at me over that Shavuos, because it was a couple of weeks before that Yom Tov, where there was a whole machlokes in town about whether the Shabbos modes are really mutter and Yom Tov, whether you can adjust or not. So I was telling everybody not to adjust the Shabbos modes. You should leave it on anyway, because it solves all the problems. But I was telling people to follow the Machmirim, not to adjust the Shabbos modes. On Yom Tov, so if the Shabbos mode guy got back on me by breaking on my Yom Tov. Anyway, get back to the story. So now that we know these two categories, there's the category of plain and simple Tzarech HaYom, then there's the higher level of Tzarech Echol Nefesh. Question is, where exactly do we draw the line? What is considered to be Echol Nefesh and what's not considered to be Echol Nefesh? Echol Nefesh, we know what Echol Nefesh is. Echol Nefesh is what you eat. That's pretty simple. Is there a more expansive definition of what's called Echol Nefesh? So there is a Gemara in the third of the Mavakamos, a very famous Gemara. The Gemara is commenting on the Mishnah in the beginning of the third parak of Maikotan, that one is not supposed to get a haircut, one is not supposed to shave on Chol HaMoed. Whether the shaving part applies to Zman HaZeh or not is a big, big machlokes, another time, another place. But the haircut part for sure applies. There's an absolute issur to get a haircut on Chol HaMoed. And the Gemara is bothered with the question, why? The Mishnah lists off all the people who are allowed to get haircuts. The guy was sick, the guy was in mitzvah, the guy was in another, a half a dozen exceptions, but a regular normal person cannot get a haircut in Cholamoid. So the question is, why not? What's the yisur? So the starting point of the Gemara was, is that there's nothing wrong. The starting point was that, why should it be also? The starting point is that l'chora getting a haircut should be permissible. So the Gemara goes all around the Mobile trying to figure out what's wrong with getting a haircut in Chol HaMoed. And finally, at the last line, the Gemara says, Hachinami Kedeshli Kansel Rebbe Chushay Menu Volin. The reason why you're not allowed to get a haircut on Chol HaMoed is because Chazal wanted to make sure you get one from beforehand. Because if people know that they could take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, they're going to be busy Erev Yontif. They're not going to bother getting a haircut. They can enter into Yontif not looking so nice. So to, in a sense, force people to get ready for Yontif properly. Chazal said, if you don't get a haircut now, you're going to go the whole week without getting a haircut. So therefore, they made an Issa Dirabanan called Ein Megalchen B'Moed. But it has nothing to do with Malacha. It has to do with a special, unique Issa Dirabanan to strongly encourage people to get haircuts from beforehand. So that, theoretically, that was the source of the Machlokes of Rishonim. Let's say a person got a haircut at Erev Yontif, and now he wants to get another one at Chol HaMoed. So Rabbi Natan said, so what's wrong? And it's okay. Rabbi Natan said, the whole reason was to force you to get a haircut. I did what I was supposed to do. I got my haircut. So now it should be mutter for me to get a haircut at Chol HaMoed. And most of the other Rishonim disagree with Rabbi Natan and says, no. There's a Marasayan. A guy sees you sitting in the barbershop. He doesn't know you got a haircut from before Yontif. So it's going to be a terrible Marasayan. So as a low plug, Chazal instituted that nobody can get haircuts on Chol HaMoed, even though you personally may have gotten one from before him. So that was the shayla of his manazeh, a person who shaves every day. So Rabbi Shah had a chiddush. Rabbi Shah writes that even though we don't accept Rabbi Natan, we paskin that if you got a haircut from before Yontif, you may not get one on Chol HaMoed. Says Rabbi Shah, that only makes sense when it comes to haircuts, because no one's going to know who got a haircut every day. If you see a guy sitting in the barbershop third day Chol HaMoed, why would you think he got one last week? But when it comes to shaving, if I see a guy walks into shul, first day Chol HaMoed, clean shaven, so I know that the person shaves every day, so I'm not going to think he didn't shave before Yontif. I know he shaved before Yontif, and now he shaved again on Chol HaMoed. So comes the Moshe and says, even those who disagree with Rabbeinu Tam should really agree to Rabbeinu Tam in the case of shaving for the person who shaves every day. The person who has a beard doesn't shave every day, so that's the same as haircuts. But just because you personally trimmed your beard on Erev Yontif would not be a hetzer to trim it again on Chol HaMoed. But if you shave every day, so Moshe said the svar should be l'chol ha'deis, it should be mutter to shave on Chol HaMoed. That was Moshe's big chiddush. At the end of the tshuva, Moshe writes, but you know, it's a chiddush, not everyone agrees to it, not everyone said it, other parts can disagree. So therefore, it's more appropriate not to shave on Chol HaMoed. That's where Moshe leaves off the tshuva. That's the Torah Shabbat South part of the discussion. Then the Torah Shabbat Peh kicks in. So the way the story goes is that people then asked Rav Moshe, if your svar is really right, that if you shave from before Yontif, it's mutter to shave on Yontif, for the person who shaves every day, you should be mechuyif to. Or because you can look like a mess for the last days of Yontif. So the whole svar was to make the person look nice. If you hold that it's usher, the chacham made a gezeira, and it's usher, you can't shave, so what are you going to do? But if according to your svar, it's really mutter, so we shouldn't fall back and say, well, it's better not to. We should say, forget, it's better too. You should have to go ahead and chachim, you should shave on Chol HaMoed. So the way the story, the Tosha Rapeh goes, is that when they asked him much the question, he said, he said, yeah, you're right. But that's not what it says in the print. In the print of Tshuva, it just says that Bnei Taira shouldn't shave on Chol HaMoed, it's a chiddush, you should follow what it says in Shulchan Aruch, don't come up with this razzle dazzle chiddush, it's a nice tikkun Torah, but it's not lahalacha. So again, different version of what exactly Moshe said. But there are other poskim who disagree with the Moshe on both sides. There are some who said that the lumbus of Moshe wasn't right. It was a gezeira, and the gezeira applies under all circumstances. But a tam of Bapa gezeira, as we spoke about many times, that's what many poskim held. Another person said that the version about Peh Moshe is right. That we should talk to tell people they should shave a Chol HaMoed. The Chatchim, they should shave a Chol HaMoed. So you name it, you got it. So some person says it's a gomer midirabana to shave a Chol HaMoed this man is no matter what. And there are others who say that it's a chiyuv gomer to shave a Chol HaMoed. And the Moshe in the middle said it's probably mutter, but you shouldn't do it anyway. So you have whichever position you want, you have. If you trim it every color, I don't know, it gets ready in the fine lines of where to draw that, I don't know. There's a fascinating tshuva in the Nezvi Huda where he writes that he was one of the Mekilim in his days to shave a Chol HaMoed. He thought you could follow him. Tamik, Radin. So the Nezvi Huda over 200 years ago, was Mekel to Shev on Chol HaMoed. And then he writes in the Tshuva that the reason why he was Mekel to Shev on Chol HaMoed, he doesn't want to publicize it in the Tshuva. He has a reason why, but he's saying he has an interesting reason why he was so lenient to Shev on Chol HaMoed. So one of his Talmidim writes, what was the great secret that the Rebbe didn't want to tell people? So the Rebbe had a Chiddush that, you know, there's an Issa Deraisa, to shave with a razor. So the Rebbe had a Chiddush that it could be that the only time one violates the Issa Deraisa of shaving with a razor, if one technically shaves a hair. That's the Issa Losashkas Pasuk Kanecha. What if the hair has barely grown? It hasn't reached the point of likely to be a hair yet. So there's a shear, how big a stare has to be. So technically speaking, if you think about it, from the time the person starts to shave in his life, if he shaves every day, he never lets his hair grow the chlal, he may never violate the Issa Deraisa Losashkas Pasuk Kanecha. Maybe. It's a Chiddush Gadol. We don't talk to him like that, whatever. That's a Chiddush of the Nevi'ida. So the Nevi'ida was very nervous, because in the 1700s, when he was writing, it was the beginning already of the emancipation, already before the ghetto walls were breaking down, people started to shave. It was kind of the in thing, you know, in the outside world, the goyim were shaving. So the Jews started to, close mouth, the Jews were living in the ghettos, the Jews weren't shaving. They started to become more westernized, more secularized, they started to shave. So you had people who were basically shomer Torah mitzvahs who were shaving, and they were shaving with razors. So, no, electric shavers, they were shaving with razors. So the Yehuda felt terrible. He says, "We're going to tell them not to shave the whole week Chol HaMoed. They'll listen to me, and then what will happen? Motzei Yontov, they'll shave with their razors, and then they will have accumulated the weeks of a beard, and that'll be a Nisa Deraisa. So I'd rather have them shave every day, not to go 2-3 days without shaving, lest they chalila end up violating Nisa Deraisa. So one can understand why the Yehuda didn't want to put that into print, because the last thing he wants to do is to encourage people to shave with razors the rest of the year. So that was his hidden secret. Now 200 years later, so we can spill the beans on the secret of the Yehuda. Anyway. Get back to the story. So the Gemara is clear that the whole issue of shaving or getting haircuts on Chol HaMoed has nothing to do with Malach. It was a special reason to enhance Kavod HaYontif. So the Ritva on that Gemara is bottom of the Kasha. I thought it was on the Mamakam, so I only got lost in the Mamakam. The Ritva on that Gemara asked the Kasha. The Ritva says, why did the Gemara say, you're not allowed to shave and I'll get a haircut? Because it's Malach. It's a nice umud. I don't know how to give myself my own haircut. If I ever tried to give you a haircut, you would never want to get another haircut from me. So giving a haircut is a nice umud. So why do we say that an umud is also a nice umud? Is also I have a tzarech hayom, but it's a nice umud. So the Ritva says, you see from this Gemara that the Gemara did not say it's also because of malacha. The Gemara had to find a whole other reason to offer it. Shall he kanes l'rebish manuvo? What's wrong with malacha? Says the Ritva, this would be in the category of eichel nefesh. Eichel nefesh. What does that do? Eichel nefesh. So says the Ritva, Eichel Nefesh doesn't only mean food. Eichel Nefesh means any bodily needs. Anything that's a Tzarech HaGuf is considered to be Eichel Nefesh. And then the Ritva throws in for good luck, not only the Tzarech HaGuf, L'Yipui HaGuf. Anything that makes the body look nice, look pretty, anything that's related to you personally, to your body, that's automatically included in the overall Het of Eichel Nefesh. You can cook on Chol HaMoed, even if it's a nice Uman. You can shecht on Chol HaMoed. You can fix your ovens on Chol HaMoed. You can make your beer on Chol HaMoed. You could take care of whatever tzarech HaGuf you have on Chol HaMoed. And you can even take care of beautifying your group on Chol HaMoed, also Mikra Din. Therefore, there's nothing really wrong, nothing really asur with a person getting a haircut on Chol HaMoed. Why did Chazal asur it? For a totally tangential reason. To encourage you to get a haircut from before Yom Tov. But in terms of Malacha, there's really nothing wrong. So that opens up a very, very extended definition as to what's considered to be a quote-unquote Echol Nefesh. Echol Nefesh means any bodily need, and not even need, any bodily tzarech, tikkun, and everything, Yipui is also considered to be under the category of Echol Nefesh, and everything goes for those kinds of needs. This sugya, in terms of tzarech hayom, so we said tzarech hayom is a great kula, but it's only a certain point, only permits the ma'aseh hegyo. It doesn't permit a ma'aseh uman, but there is one exception to that rule, another exception to that rule, that's the next in the Ma'aseh Kamos. So the Shulchan Aruch and Siddin Tavkuf Memdala Tebalef, quoting from the sugya in Maseches Mekotan, tzarechi rabim mutla saisa b'chol ha'moed. One is permitted to do any communal need on chol ha'moed. And clearly this is talking about even ma'aseh uman. It means tzarechi rabim is better than a tzarechi yochid. A tzarechi yochid, so one is only permitted to do a ma'aseh hedyo. Whereas a tzarechi rabim, everything goes. Some of the Rishonim explain why we so make it without tzarechi rabim. So some of the Rishonim say, because tzarechi rabim is almost like a dover of it. Why? Because as we all know, whenever you have a communal need, that means no one's going to get it done. So therefore the Tanoim were afraid that if we tell you can't do anything of tzarechi rabim and Chol HaMoed, On Cholamoed, the only time something may actually get done, because people are off from work. So you're not working in your regular fields. People got a lot of time on their hands. So therefore, Chazal permitted certain Tzorchei Rabbim, and they're willing to call Tzorchei Rabbim a new category in Hilchos Cholamoed, because it's a quasi-dover of it. So what are some examples of Tzorchei Rabbim? Go on the Sakhet Adrachim, if the highways have to be fixed up, Lahasmer Machshola, gotta fix the potholes. Can you imagine? On Cholamoed. So you gotta go fix the potholes that you're allowed to do in Cholamoed. Ulitzayin HaKvaras, Kadesh Yizarma, and HaKohanim. If you don't mark the graves in the open fields, so the Kohanim aren't going to be able to travel, that's going to interfere with their walking around. All these Tzorchei Rabbim are permitted to be done on Cholamoed. But comes the Ramah and puts the brakes on the Sagah. Tadavka Tzorchei Rabbim Ke'elu, Shem Tzrichim Agufa Adam. Only these kinds of communal needs, that people's bodily needs, have to be met. About Shai Tzorchei Rabbim, Kom Binyan Deis HaKnesses, Osir Lasos B'moyed. Comes the Ramah and says, to build a shul, it sounds like that's the greatest Tzorchei Rabbim around. Nope, that's also to do in Cholamoed. You know why? That's not called Tzorchei Rabbim. That's Tzorchei Neshama. That's not called Tzorchei Aguf. All the other things here are quasi Tzorchei Aguf. Fixing the roads, fixing the potholes, even making the Kohanim able to walk. The Mikvos is a little bit of a tricky one. Why is that? Unless one argues that if you don't have the, if you don't make the Mikvos, then you won't be able to be together. Husbands and wives won't be able to be together. Or if you don't make the Mikvah, you won't be able to eat the Truma, you won't be able to eat the Kachin. So maybe one can argue that's a little bit more of a Tzorchei Aguf. Whereas a Shul, I'm not saying, no, shul's not the most, I mean, it's very important, shul, but it's not the most important thing in the world. This is a quote from Mechuvah Sarashba. The Tzorchei Rabbim, the buck stops here, it has to only be a physical need, not a spiritual need. Some of the later Acharenim write that maybe we have a right to be a little bit more lenient about building shuls for a different reason. Maybe building shuls does not as that, at least from the Acharenim, the earlier Acharenim writing, was a little bit of a dover of it. Why? In order to build a shul, you had to get permission from the goyim. We also had to get permission from the non-Jews. It was a different kind of a permission. So in those days, you know, you went to the Lord, you went to the Duke, whoever it was, and he gave you permission. Your lucky gave you permission to build a shul. You're starting to build. And then the Duke gets in a bad mood, he gets into a fight with the Jews, and he takes away the permits. Says you can't build anymore. So if they're going to stop construction for a week, so who knows what's going to happen? Building a shul is so risky that the goyim would get so angry at the Jews, they would tell them to stop building the shuls. It happened all the time. To stop in the middle is going to be mavish hashayah v'dover over. You end up nish there. So therefore, many achronim write that you live in a gracious society where you're subject to the whims of the non-Jewish rulers, so then maybe building a shul should fall into the category of a dover of it. Yeah. Also a problem. So again, this is Bismanazet, very hard to invoke that kula that they were using in the olden days. In the days of the early Shavuot days, so they were mamish subject to stand the whims of any ruler. Here, I'm not saying it's so easy to get permits for everything, but Lamaisa, once you get a permit and you're in the middle of building, so it's highly unlikely to call you and tell you that they're revoking the permit because they're angry with the Jewish community, so it's probably not going to happen. So it's hard to call it a dover of it. So since the Ramah said that it's not considered to be a Tzorchei Haguf, it's not, doesn't fall under the category of Tzorchei Rabbim, then you have a problem. Then any Maisa Umman is going to be a problem. Maybe Maisa Hedjah will be okay. If it's, let's say, for argument's sake, you want to get the shul ready for the last days. The shul is otot ready to be used for simple Torah, and you have a couple of odds and ends to touch up. So it depends what those odds and ends are. If those odds and ends are Tzorchei, Maisa Hedjah, then it's no worse than sewing your clothes. So Maisa Hedjah Tzorchei Moed is mutter. But if it's a Maisa Umman, you have to call the contractors to do the last couple of the works. You need someone to fix the lights, someone to fix the plumbing or something. Those are things most people can't do. So those L'chor would be a problem. So again, the building of shul is very important, but it's not quite a Tzorchei Aguf in order to permit it on Cholamoed. Maisa
Umman also applies to a non-Jewish Kabbalah?
Yeah, because, Kabbalah gets a little bit trickier. Whatever you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do for you. That's the same as Amir Yaakov and Shabbos and Yontif. A Kabbalah means that I hire a person to do a job, and I say, listen, I want you to finish this job. I'd like you to finish in the next 6 months, but basically you're working at your own pace. So, Me'ikar Adin, one could argue, some Mishnayim argue, maybe that's called Amir Yaakov. Rabbi Natan held you can do that on Shabbos also. So we don't pass like Rabbi Natan. Most of the Rishon disagreed and said that even though technically he's working at his own pace, but he's working in your property. If I give my suit in to the non-Jewish cleaner and he's cleaning it whenever he wants, it's on his premises, he's doing whatever he wants, nobody knows. But to have the non-Jewish construction company coming into my building, to my shul, to my house, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, that's a problem. And we try to avoid that on Chol HaMoed also. So one should really try, if at all possible, to put on hold any of the construction. You have a similar shiloh, you have a lot of Chol HaMoed, a shiloh of gardeners. When you, a person hires a gardener to come, I don't tell the gardener when to come. So over the next couple of months, they want you at some point to do the lawn, to do this, to clean up. So the gardener decides to come on Chol HaMoed. But you have to send him away. So some folks can say, yeah. Some folks can say that even though he's coming on Da'as Atmo, but he's coming to your property, everybody sees him work in your backyard, so that's like a marasai in the Malach on Chol HaMoed. So maybe you should send him away. Remember when I first came to the Rabban Paramus, we lived in Washington Heights for a couple of years, so we didn't have any gardeners, nothing growing in Washington Heights. So we moved to Paramus and had a lawn, so I had to call a gardener. So I remember the first witness we were there, so I went through the days of the garden. I said to him, please don't come this day and don't come this whole week of the holiday. So he scratches his head. He says to me, you know, I don't understand. He says, I got a lot of Jewish clients here, and they all tell me that I'm not allowed to come these 2 days, I'm not allowed to come the last 2 days, but the days in the middle, everybody else says you're allowed to come. What's going on? So I look him straight in the face, he says, well, that's why I'm the rabbi. I said, I have extra days of holidays above and beyond. If I go explain to him that they're following Rabbeinu Tam, I'm not a shekel Torah to the garden. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So even though the Ramah comes down hard on the building of the shuls, comes to Shulchan Aruch and turns around with the following possible kula, in the last line of the Mamakamas, so Shulchan Aruch Atokos Mem Hei, Sif Beis writes, what's the din if you realize in shul you only have one secretary in the whole shul, and it has a mistake in it? Are you allowed to have a sofer come and fix it on Chol HaMoed? So Nir Elishin, Ein Lam Sefer Kosher, Likos Bo B'Tzibur, Mutla Gei B'Chol HaMoed, Dei Likos Bo B'Tzibur. He says that if your mom is stuck, it's the only sefer around. If you have 20 other svarim, so what do you have to write in Chol HaMoed for? But if you have, that's the only sefer around, then it would be permissible. Aye, but you're not allowed to do malacha to ma'isa uman. I don't know how to fix sefer dar. You need a sofer, you need a professional. So Ein Lecha ma'isa uman godom is there. But presumably that would be permissible. Why would that be permissible? Because the Chorah were calling it Tzachei Rabim. Because if you don't call it Tzachei Rabim, if you call it Tzachei Yochid, if you're not willing to invoke the kula of Tzachei Rabim, Tzachei Yom is not matur ma'isa uman. So the Chorah, the fact that Shulchan Aruch permits you to fix the Sefer Torah, that seems to be relying on this idea. So the problem with this is that this seems to contradict what we said before. That's what we took on the back of the page. The Be'al Locha points out, I have a Bir Agro. Says the Gra, if you hold that you can't build a shul in Chol HaMoed, how can you fix the Sefer Torah in Chol HaMoed? It's the same Shaila. Those are examples of Tzachei Rabim, but not physical Tzachei Rabim, the spiritual Tzachei Rabim. So why should the Sefer Torah be more important, in a sense, than the building of the shul? Unless one wants to argue as follows, unless one wants to argue that maybe I have to fix the Sefer Torah, not based on Tzachei Rabim, maybe it's like the Dover of it. What's the Dover of it? I'm going to lose the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah. If I don't build the shul, I'll lose anything. I'll down in someone's basement. It'll be a hassle, it'll be hard, but we'll be able to function. Mashenkin, if I don't save a Torah, I won't be able to learn. So maybe that's, the heter is not so much Tzachei Rabim, maybe the heter is based on the idea of a shtickle dover of it. That's what some perhaps want to suggest. Then we had a shaila several years ago. We don't have Megillus of Unclaw in our shul, but somebody came to ask me to shayla about it. You're allowed to fix the Megillah. They realized late Shashirim that Shabbos Chol HaMoed, and they realized on Chol HaMoed, they were looking over the Megillah, and they realized there was a mistake in the Megillah. So the shayla is, you permitted to fix the Megillah on Chol HaMoed. So this is a little bit more chomer, because we're not even so sure you can fix the Sefer Torah. But to fix the Megillah, so first of all, what's the tremendous tzorech to read from the Megillah? Most folks can say, the minig you saw most places, they never had Megillahs. I'd say it's only a minig anyway, Kalin Shashimi. I'd say we're the Chumash. They never need a Megillah, number one. And number two, maybe a Megillah that's missing a letter here and there is kosher. The same Megillah says there is kosher. Maybe Megillah Shashim is also kosher. That's a big machlekes aposkim. So I remember the a rav from another shul came by. It was Chol HaMoed Shabbos, Chol HaMoed Pesach, Chol HaMoed Sukkot. They came in the middle of davening. We were in the middle of the davening Shacharis, and they walked into shul, they walked up to the front, and they whispered in my ear, they whispered the Shaila. They said to me, we have, it was already time to lay, and they realized that they were missing, it was missing some letters in the Megillah. They hadn't fixed it before. They wanted to know, can they use the Megillah? Can they make a bracha in the Megillah? They wanted to know what the din was. So, I was honest in the middle of davening, so I started motion to them what the din would be. So I got one of my kids, whatever it was, I got the sefer in Hukas Cholamoid. So in the back of the Hukas Cholamoid, he talks about the whole Shaila. So I figured that was the most concise place to present it to this other Rav. He could read it on his own. I couldn't talk, it was a little super zimra. So I showed him the sefer. I said, basically, I pointed him that he shouldn't bother, that he could make the lane even with a mistake, and it's not the end of the world. But I hope upon him, this idea of Tzarchei HaMoed, Tzarchei Rabman on Cholamoid, does give you a certain leeway to do things that you would not be permitted to do with Tzarchei Yochid. How do you define precisely? So we're getting somewhat contradictory messages from the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. Is the, when it comes to the shul, we end up to be machmir. When it comes to Sefer Torah, we tend to be a little bit more mekel. So different opinions about where exactly to draw the line in terms of Tzarchei HaMoed. So Kopanim, there are definitely different categories, gradations of Tzarchei HaMoed. There's the Tzarchei HaMoed, not of Erchel Nefesh, where the line is drawn clearly between my Ulam versus my Sadia. Then you have Tzarchei Erchel Nefesh with the all extended definition, including getting haircuts, except for that special gezeira not to. But anything that's tzarecha yipay, gof tikkun, gof tzarecha, gof eichel, everything is mutter, even a ma'aseh umun, achshir in the works, everything is mutter. And then you have this new category, which is not erchel nefesh, but it's the category called tzarechei rabim, which once again, everything is mutter, but where do you draw the line with called tzarechei rabim, whether that's only physical or even spiritual, that becomes somewhat questionable.
Tzarechei rabim only communal is just multiple people too. From a public gathering in my home, and the air conditioning is gone.
I don't think that's Tzarchei Rabim. I think Tzarchei Rabim means communal things. Maybe it's supposed to fix the air conditioning anyway. There's Tzarchei Guf. Different stuff. Right, different stuff. Okay. Alright, we'll stop here. Right. My Sulman is Mutter, right. Dov Rabim is Mutter, right. Okay, so we'll see about next week. We'll try to send out an email. Again, most of the other will be here next week.